This is the Bloom Pod, and I'm Taylor Onion.
And I'm Melissa Lutz.
Each episode, we bring you an interview with an everyday person who is chasing big dreams. I interview the guests for the first part of the show, and then Melissa and I come together and recap some of the main points at the end.
With the occasional shenanigan.
This week's guest is an entrepreneur in the business of higher education, so we've got a nice transition over to the new block here. She is a consultant, a mother, a colleague, and so much more. This is our first of three folks in higher education. Please enjoy our conversation with Jennifer Cross. Jen, I am super excited to have you on today. Obviously, we have some crossover now with the recent merger acquisition between Gameplan yep. and Athlete Viewpoint, but I'm going to have you kind of kick things off here. Let's do like a 30-second synopsis of Jen Cross. You know, who are you? What do you do? What do you love?
Wow. So in 30 seconds, I am a mom. That always goes near the top. So I have two boys who I'm on the verge of being an empty nester. So that's prevalent. I'm a wife, been married 25 years to a great guy. I am a daughter, parents who've raised, loved, supported me through thick and thin. I'm a sibling. I'm a dog mom. I'm a champion beach sitter. I love parking at the edge of the wave with a book where you have to just hold the book up enough so that it doesn't get drenched by that occasional rogue wave that comes and washes over you as you're in your beach chair. Mm-hmm. I think those are the highlights.
I might have to steal that champion beach sitter. I've not done a great job this past year of getting out to the beach, and especially living in Florida, but I might have to steal that. That's a nice one.
Go for it. It's I live in central Pennsylvania. So that one I don't get to do as much as I used to when I lived on the East Coast, but wherever we vacation, there's always a beach involved. And my people know that they can just drop me off in the morning and come back with a sandwich about 4 hours later, and I'll pretty much be right where they left me.
and you're good to go.
A book and a beach chair. That's all I need.
I like it. You asked me a similar question. One of the first times that we connected, I think it was, what do you love, or mm-hmm. who? Tell me about who you love. And that's a question that I had never been, asked before. And so something like, you know, again, who are the people you care most about? So I thought that was an interesting way and a great opportunity for me here to flip that back on you. But
yeah, I see what you did there.
Yeah. That was a tip, you know, from you included in back in the show. So you have spent, a ton of time working in several capacities in education, mm-hmm. in leadership. Yep. Tell me about what prompted an interest in that field. How did you get into it? Kind of walk me through what that looked like for you.
Sure. So I started, believe it or not, I was a pharmacy major in college. Not a lot of people know that, right. But I went to college and I was going to be a pharmacist, Taylor. And I have no idea how I came to that conclusion. I do not descend from a long line of pharmacists, but that's what I went to school for. So I went to a large public university where I figured I could stay right there, go all the way through. They had a school of pharmacy. And by the summer between my sophomore and junior year in college, I had three majors. I figured out that pharmacy was not for me very quickly. Really went into that summer really feeling like adrift. Like I just did not know what I was going to do with my life, which hindsight now, right? Especially having been in college education for so long, not uncommon for a 20-year-old.
Yes.
But I spent that summer working as a summer orientation leader for incoming freshmen. And at the end of that summer, I remember saying to the orientation director, gosh, this was so much fun. It's too bad I can't do this, you know, all the time. And he looked at me and he's like, what do you think I do? Like, what do you think my job is? And I was like, oh, that's a thing. So I learned more about it that summer, immediately switched my major. So my junior year, I started from scratch with a major, gutted out a sociology major in 2 years.
Oh my gosh.
And but went straight to grad school for college counseling and student personnel. And so that's really where I got into that whole student affairs space, fell in love with higher education and what it can do and what it provides, and got to teach. I've gotten to do some curriculum development. I've done a lot in the student leadership development space. And so all of those things were sort of the trajectory of the first part of my career. And then I became a mom. And I became a mom less than 2 weeks after 9/11. And I was living in New Jersey.
Wow.
And so in the sort of quiet of maternity leave, which I had taken, all of that was the backdrop. I mean, that was the news. Right. It was just, you know, prevalent for the whole country. But especially living in that area, you know, my workplace was evacuated that morning. I had to drive home. I'm trying to talk with my husband, who's on his campus, who's trying to figure out what to do. It was really, you know, becoming a parent is jarring in and of itself. Becoming a parent in that context was really jarring. Mm-hmm. And I got to January and thought, I'm a planner. So I'd worked my whole plan. The daycare had been picked out for a year probably before I was pregnant. I had the daycare picked out. And I just thought, I want to do this differently. Things didn't look the same. They didn't feel the same. And what was important didn't feel the same. And so I just started my own company. And everything that I've done since has just come from that space.
The CSP, the College Student Personnel major, is something that I feel like, and you can correct me, I'm sure you know more about it, I feel like is not as popular today or doesn't exist in the same capacity that it did. Yeah. My mom, I can't remember if it was her undergrad or her master's, but it was the same thing constantly. Yeah. Oh, you would be interested in this. I really think you'd be great at CSP, all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I've never heard of that. So, and I started off as a business major, switched into advertising, and then of course landed in higher education and athletics as well. So kind of a pivot there for me, but it's always interesting to hear how, especially a pharmacy major, started off that way and then transitioned into this different space. So that's, again, it's just always interesting to me to kind of hear all that stuff. So at what point then, in working in student affairs and working in leadership and all these different spaces in higher education, at what point, where does the interest in sport come in?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, it's a great question because I do have a non-traditional background in this sense. One of the things that I realized early on, and this is before I stopped working at different colleges and universities, you know, I was working at the University of Michigan in the 90s. My husband was doing his PhD there. And I was in a new student program's office. You know, we did orientation and mentoring and welcome week. I got to do welcome week for 5,000 freshmen. That was fun. One of the most fun jobs I've ever had. Just pure fun. But I met a volleyball coach through a woman who is a great friend and mentor of mine. Her husband coached volleyball at the University of Michigan. His name was Greg Giovinazzi. And Greg and I used to have really fun conversations about leadership. And I started following his team and going to games. And one day, out of the blue, he asked me if I would travel with his team up to the northern part of Michigan, Leelanau, and do some conversations and some programming around leadership development for his team. And so I did. And it was incredibly fun. I fell in love with it right away. I fell in love with the culture of high performance and striving, and they were very goal-oriented. And those are things that leaders do, right? So there was this synergy between the leadership development piece on the student side. I was working with a lot of student leaders and organizations who are striving, who are trying to build their teams and doing all of these things. And it just was a really natural transition to the athletic space. And by the time we moved away from Michigan, we were in Michigan for, I think, 4 years. I had worked with 5 women's teams there at the university and a couple of coaches. And so that was my side hustle before there was a word for it. Right. I had a side hustle before there was such a thing as a side hustle. Mm-hmm. And I just kept doing that everywhere I went. People would just sort of naturally reach out. They'd see me in one context or one space and then invite me into what they were doing. And so my ability to pivot and step out of full-time work and start my own company really happened because I'd already had this pre-established client base that leaned on me anyway, mm-hmm. outside of my normal job. So
I really appreciate, and obviously I'm biased in saying this, but I really appreciate that volleyball was the entry into the athletic space. That's awesome.
Yeah. I knew you'd like that one.
Yeah. I definitely appreciate that. I also saw, that you are a leadership facilitator, and I have to ask mm-hmm. you about that because my mom and at least one of our other guests that we had on early this year, before we went on our very long hiatus, have been involved with that organization at some point. So I have to ask, how did you get involved, and what does your involvement look like in that space?
Sure. So leadership, I love leadership. And anybody who's been involved with leadership loves leadership. So I got introduced to leadership when I was at Michigan. Michigan was one of the earliest institutions that offered leadership, an institute that was campus based. Again, introduced to it there. And became a cluster facilitator for them first, which meant that, so the Leadership Institute used to be, it still is a version of it, 6 days. And you pack up with a group of 60 to 70 students and a handful of professional staff, and you go off to the woods. And so I started out as a cluster facilitator, which is someone who gets assigned a small group of students, usually 8 students or so, 10 students. And you're walking alongside their experience. So you're supporting when they need support. You're pushing a little bit when you think that they're capable of digging a little deeper or clarifying. You're helping them clarify their thinking around what their vision is for themselves, for the world, for their campus. And then from there, you become a co-lead. And then as a co-lead, you're sent all around the country with another person that changes out all the time. And so I've done co-lead at a couple of institutions, New Hampshire. We were in the woods in New Hampshire. ECU, that's one of my ECU connections. I did ECU leadership 4 or 5 years ago. And you then are charged with delivering leadership's curriculum.
Okay.
So as the co-lead, that's your responsibility. And then you are supporting the students, but it's also about supporting those cluster facilitators who are campus staff, who are helping out. So the thing that I love most about leadership is really it's their mission and their vision for the world. And they're go big or go home, right? So it's been, their vision has been their vision for the 20 some years I've been affiliated with them. You know, they talk about creating spaces that are just, caring, and thriving, where people lead with integrity and have a healthy disregard for the impossible. And I've said many times to many people, if you can't get behind that, like, there's a problem.
Right.
And so it really, a lot of the leadership philosophy is the philosophy of how I've approached my work, of how I try to work with my clients. It's about being caring. It's about helping them to do their best work, be their best selves, if it's that one-to-one coaching piece. It's about doing it all with a framework of integrity, being really clear about what your values are. And it's about doing things that we think we can't do. And empowering people to know that they're capable of more, that we're always all capable of more than what we're currently doing. And I don't just mean busy work.
Right.
I mean like meaningful work.
Right.
I don't mean like you can crank out 6 more memos in a day. You know, it's about things that are going to enact change, drive change.
Right. Is there, okay, so you, and I'm just curious about this really from my own personal gain here. You mentioned that you take these students out into the woods or into, you know, kind of a remote yeah. location, is there a physical component too? So when you're talking about pushing them to more than what they mm-hmm. think they're capable of, is that strictly in the mental, the vulnerability space, or mm-hmm. is there a physical component to it too, where maybe you're doing high ropes courses and things mm-hmm. like that?
Yeah. So it has historically included some type of challenge course. And very early on, and that's to help them, because they're student leaders who are coming together from all across their institution. So they don't all know each other. Right. Some of them know each other. Some of them have pre-existing relationships, but a lot of them don't. And it's about creating a space for them to start to maybe trust people that they don't know very well, to encourage someone that I don't know very well. And so there typically is a challenge element to it. It has historically been challenged by choice, which means that you're not going to be forced to do anything that you're wildly uncomfortable with. If you don't want to go up over a 20-foot wall, there's no rule that says you have to do it, you know, or you're going home. Your peers are going to try and encourage you. They're going to try and help you get past what it is that is holding you back from going over that wall. Maybe the fear that you have about that activity. You're going to work together to help make sure everybody who wants to do that is successful. But there is that piece of it that really does help coalesce a team.
We did, and I grew up on, it was called Hornfield Campus, that was right near okay. Western. And so, and one of my mom's good friends now runs it. I don't think she did when I was a kid, but used to go out there and just, you know, rock climb, and you could be in the yep. middle of the woods and, you know, doing all this high ropes and whatever stuff. But during college, one of our, they're called networkers, but he would come and do some leadership and motivational stuff with us as well. He had NFL experience yeah. and worked with their rookie symposium and things like that. And he has his own high ropes course. And as you're describing Ooh. This, I'm thinking back to that experience, because we did it as a team, of course, but we would always do it during preseason. And looking back, mm-hmm. I'm like, why did Kevin take us out there? Because we could have definitely fallen off, and you know what I mean? Like, that could have ruined everything. But it's so much fun. And it is there. You just learn to operate in a different way, because it is we're used to being in the gym and kind of pushing ourselves to the brink of exhaustion in that physical sense, but not in the sense of, okay, I know physically that I can climb to the top of this 20, mm-hmm. 30, 40 foot pole, but do I want to? Is this something that my brain can handle? So it's just an interesting combination. And I think, you know, that experience combined with the mental aspect of it, the vulnerability, I want to push myself to mm-hmm. be a better leader, is just mm-hmm. such a unique combination.
Yeah. It's, you know, we tell ourselves all the time things that we can't do, and we don't spend a lot of time. And this is where the coaching piece comes in for me, is so my job in that space sometimes is to say, why is it that you think you can't do that? Or why is it that you think that won't work out? Or what's the story that you're telling yourself that's going to have it end up this way, when it really could end up that way and be amazing? And part of that is I have to be willing to do those things for myself. I can't just tell people what to do, or, you know, be like, oh, I'm really going to push you, and now I'm going to go sit in the corner. Mm-hmm. You know, I've never been a fan of heights. My whole life. I don't know what happened to me as a child that I don't recall anymore that has led me to that conclusion, but I just, inside, there's something about it that I just I don't love. And we were on vacation a few years ago. We were at the Delaware Shore, and my husband and I split up for the day, and we each took a boy to have some good quality one-on-one time. And my husband and my oldest son went jet skiing, and my youngest wanted to go parasailing. Mm. I think that's what it's called, where they pop you up and you've got the chute behind you, and they drag you behind the boat.
Yep.
Right. And I thought, oh, for the love, like, how did I not get the jet ski? Like, it's right there. It's on the water. Like, why do I get the one that goes up in the air? And I was not super excited, but it was his day. It was his choice. And I remember sitting on the boat thinking, oh my gosh, am I going to be able to do this? And I just said to myself, yeah, like, you're going to do it. Like, people have been doing this for the last hour. Nobody's, you know, the cord hasn't cut. They're not flying off over Maryland. And I did it. We had a great time. It was amazing. And after it ended, the woman on the boat took a couple pictures while we were at it. One of my favorite pictures of my whole life that reminds me to step out of my own comfort zone. It's my son and I were already up off the boat, you know, back behind the boat. We're probably only about half as high as we're going to get. And we're looking at each other and it's pure joy. And I would have missed it.
Yep.
And that picture is a huge reminder for me about how you can't always listen to the thoughts in your own head, mm-hmm. because they'll talk you out of, you know, they'll talk you out of anything if you let them.
Oh yeah.
And we need those thoughts sometimes, yes. right? To keep us out of danger.
Right.
But there's danger. And then there's what's just uncomfortable.
Right.
And you have to be really clear about what that line is.
Yeah. Yeah. Gosh, that's awesome. And what a great visual representation to have of exactly what you just described, right? Between essentially risk, small,
yeah.
low level yeah. risk, we'll say, and then actual, you yep. know, danger where you're at. So that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
So at this point, I'm starting to see, and I have a little bit more background on you, obviously, than probably our listeners do, but I'm starting to see how, you know, your path and the experiences that you have had led to the creation of Athlete Viewpoint. Mm-hmm. But can you tell me how mm-hmm. that came about? Obviously, we talked about your interest in sport, but with Athlete yeah. Viewpoint specifically, how did it come about?
Yeah, so long story short, I took an alternative MBA class back in the winter of 2016.
Okay.
And one of our assignments was we had to do a business model canvas about a pre-existing business or an idea that was not our own. So I had walked into that space because I was really starting to examine my consulting firm. And how do I take that to the next level? I'd been a one-person show. How do I grow it so that I have associates and we can take in more work and those sorts of things? And so I did a business model canvas on one sentence that my husband had in a notebook, which was student-athlete surveys, student-athlete feedback. Mm. Every stop he had, he found problems with the process, with the instrument itself, with people's ability to have enough time to do this well. And so I built it out and I handed it to him and I said, here you go. I made you a present for when you retire and you're out of athletics. And we walked away from the idea for about a month. But then we kind of kept dancing around the idea mm-hmm. and thought, well, okay, if we're going to do it, let's do it. Knowing that he could really only help in a behind the scenes way. I mean, he works in intercollegiate athletics. We all know there's not a lot of free time in that space.
Right.
But he was able to help conceptually with the setup of it, strategy, all of those really important foundational things. That's why we are where we are, who we are, who we are. But we knew I would have to run it. And I really wanted to build something. And so, and I wanted to build something that would actually make a difference in people's lives.
Yep.
I think was part of it too. I wanted to build something that would help administrators. And I've had a front row seat for 2 decades plus. More and more has gotten heaped into those jobs. And there's more money in athletics than there was 20 years ago, but there's not more resources if that makes sense.
Yep.
It's not like there's this endless bank account, right?
Right.
For people who to just say, oh yeah, I want to do X, and they go take money out of the ATM machine. Like there's no money tree in the backyard.
Right.
You know, we say this to the kids too, right? Do you see a money tree in the backyard? So it was building something that would help them using that lens of having, you know, my husband was a Division I athletic director, and he knew what he needed when he showed up at President's Cabinet. He knew the data he needed to present to boards of trustees. And so it was that piece, but yet also at its very foundation, the experience of the student athlete. And the more noise that creeps into athletics, the more I sometimes fear like that piece gets buried beneath the conversations about NIL and ticket sales and what's parking going to look like this weekend because it rained and the fields are soggy. And there's all of these other things, and they all make it go. They make the enterprise go. But the enterprise at its core is about the student athlete. Mm-hmm. And so we really wanted to create something. You know, the Athlete Viewpoint mission is provide every student athlete with the opportunity for both a distinctive education, the student, and a championship experience, the athlete. And that's, so for us, all things come back to that statement. And so we've tried to build something that mirrors and supports that, and holds people accountable for that too.
There's such a fine line for athletic administrators. I mean, you just described it perfectly, right? Where you have a business to run, mm-hmm. but the business does not run without the student athletes. And I think it's so easy to get caught up in that space of, you know, we have to have all these people in place, somebody to run the marketing and the compliance and the fundraising and all these things. But what's the purpose of that? Right. They're all, literally everyone in an athletic department is there to serve the student athlete in some capacity, whether you're serving from an external standpoint, trying to shape the experience that they have from, you know, like, are you branding the athletic department and what that looks like, or marketing for them? And so it's just, it's a tightrope walk, you know, at times. So I think it's so important what you guys are doing there.
Yeah, it is a tightrope, Taylor. And it's, you know, the thing that I've really seen, especially over this last year and a half with COVID, if anybody ever wants to really wonder about resources in athletics, I talk with our partners a lot. I talk with a lot of SWAs. They're my primary point of contact typically for the survey work that we do, the feedback work that we do. A lot of times they're doing the exit interviews with student athletes. So they're up to their eyeballs in what we do. And I touch base with them a lot to get feedback, to figure out how we can make their jobs easier. Almost all of them across the board inherited the what I'll call COVID management, mm-hmm. Over this last year and a half, which in and of itself was a full-time job, and yet they still had their entire full-time job.
Yeah.
And COVID management is now a permanent part of the sport administrator responsibility. Mm-hmm. Lesser for some, more for others. But what's happened, and I've seen it happen in student affairs, it happens a lot of places, the number of roles and hats that a person has to wear keeps going up and up and up and up and up. And there aren't the resources to try and help them yep. with those things. And so that's, I think, where we've tried to alleviate some of that from the people that we work with and for. And that was a piece that was really attractive to me about coming together with Game Plan too, is they're trying to do the same thing in the career space, in the mentoring space. There's so many opportunities to streamline everything that we're doing to address then what are those other pain points that they're seeing now. Platform fatigue.
Yep.
There's a million companies out there trying to sell a million things to people in athletics. And so trying to streamline a lot of that into one space so that it is one-stop shopping to the extent that it can be. There's a lot of different needs at different places in athletics. So you have to allow for that differentiation. But really it's about trying to help people do this work better, easier, faster, in ways that allow them to go home at the end of the day and feel good about what they accomplished and feel like they were on mission.
Yeah.
And I had an SWA make a comment to me a couple of weeks ago, and it really broke my heart. She said, "I come in every morning, I put out fires all day long, I'd never even get to the to-do list. And at the end of the day, I go home feeling like I've done mediocre work at best because I'm so exhausted. Mm-hmm. And then they're going home to family.
Right.
And so it's how do we help that person?
Right.
That's really for me. I got off that call and I was like, okay, what more can we do to help that person? So I'm going to take X off of your plate for you so that you can really try to do something that you feel is meaningful.
Yeah.
So that you get to leave work again, feeling like, oh, I crushed it today. And there's a lot of people crushing it out there.
Yeah.
And I don't think sometimes people right now are giving themselves enough credit. I think people are doing great work and they are crushing it. They're just too tired to stop and feel good about that because the next day they have to go do it all over again.
Yeah. Do you think, and I'm going to pivot here for my own personal research interests. Do you think that feeling is typically, maybe COVID isn't the best, you know, this time, I think everybody across the board has been stressed, but do you think that typically that is a feeling exclusive to women where you're going to work and you're doing all these things where, you know, you're parenting or caregiving for, you know, your parents or elderly or whatever it may be. And then you're doing your actual job. And, you know, it is that sense of putting out fires all day long and then coming back and feeling like, what did I even do today? Did I even do anything that's going to make a difference?
I don't think it's unique. I think it's role dependent a lot of times. And so men or women can be carrying that load, whether it's COVID load, whether it's the dog sick and needs to go to the vet load, whether it's the parents need care. I do think, and there's a lot of research out there that women have been disproportionately affected in the workplace by the pandemic. And so I do think there's truth in that, that opinion or that statement. You know, they've done a lot of research about it. And, but you know, COVID's hit everybody.
Yeah.
And it's hit everybody in some really interesting ways. And
it's exposed a lot. I mean, it's exposed a ton of across the board, not just in athletics, but I think it's exposed a lot of the faults of how we were operating as a society before.
Absolutely. I was talking with somebody last week and they were telling me they're in a division of student affairs at an institution out on the East Coast. And they were sharing with me that 70% of their student activities, student life staff has turned over since January 1.
Oh my gosh.
And we're hearing that, we're seeing it in athletics. Mm-hmm. People are leaving athletics for other industries. These student service, I'll lump them sort of all into one category for right now, but the student service types of roles, athletics, student affairs, you know, counseling and health services, wellness centers, all of those different entities. It's the pace has been relentless, and it's been relentless in a time of great uncertainty. Mm-hmm. And when you're trying to lead in uncertain times, it's an even heavier lift because everyone and everything feels like it's unmoored.
Yep.
And you're trying to get your footing where you can, but then your footing changes the next day, right? One day there's a mandate for vaccines. One day there's, you know, the next day someone's fighting the mandate and the mandate's on pause. And so it's this constant yo-yoing right now.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, what is leading to a lot of the fatigue. And then you see that trickles down in that you get home at night and you're partner or your spouse says, so what do you want to have for dinner? And you bite their head off, right? Because you can't make one more decision about what's for dinner. And then you go, that's okay. We'll just eat out.
Yep.
And then you can't decide what kind of cuisine you want. I mean, it's playing out in all of these really different ways and it's all interconnected. And I think sometimes we don't see how interconnected it is.
Yeah. There was, this will be the last thing, we can move on to the next.
Yeah,
there was a Brené Brown podcast early on. I mean, maybe July last year. Mm-hmm. And I can't think of who she was talking to, but they were talking about, essentially pandemic burnout. And that, you know, it's going from March 13th of 2020.
Yeah.
It's been this fight or flight mode, right, for the longest time. And I think some of that is, you know, with the vaccine and different things, it's starting to ease a little bit, but just exactly how you described it, where it's this, okay, I'm in fight or flight mode. You know, as a leader, I know I have to do X, Y, Z. And as soon as I set out to do what I think is the right thing in these circumstances, something changes the next day, a CDC recommendation, you know, a best practice from another university, or somebody else had that idea first. They used it. It didn't go well. Now we have to go back to the drawing board. So it is, it's when you consider it that way, that you've been in fight or flight. I mean, you think about that from a physical standpoint.
How we're wired.
Yeah. It takes a toll. It takes a huge toll.
Yeah, absolutely. And leadership's hard on a good day. So you layer that in, and it's, and a lot of this too, I think, is we've created cultures where people have become afraid to be wrong because for whatever reason, whether you feel it's, you're going to be punished, you're going to be embarrassed, it's going to cost you your job, somebody's going to throw you under the bus, you know? So we spend a lot of time doing, like, you know, cover your ass kinds of things.
Yeah.
And it makes people afraid to act and afraid to lead and afraid to raise their hand and go first.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really have a lot of admiration for leaders, especially during this time, who were able to step out and say, okay, today, Thursday morning, 9:45, this is what I know to be true and factual. And so we're going to do X. And maybe by Monday, that's not the right decision.
Mm-hmm.
But then you come back on Monday and say, based on what we've learned now, or what you said, what we tried and didn't work, we're going to pivot a little bit and we're going to do Y. That doesn't make you a bad leader because you changed your mind.
Right.
I think it actually makes you a better leader. The job of the quote unquote followers, for lack of an easier bucket to put everybody else in right now, is to provide the leaders with the grace to change their mind.
Yeah.
And to adapt to that and to just say, okay, like, I know now that you have information that you didn't have over here.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand why the work that I just spent 6 hours doing now, maybe not as relevant.
Yeah.
But we're going to pivot and ultimately we're going to come to the best outcome.
Yeah.
And that's really what you want, is a good outcome. And sometimes the, you know, the road to great outcomes is not a straight line. And, but I think we've lost, it's the culture piece that I worry about.
Yes.
It's lack of grace for making mistakes.
Yep.
And that's causing people to retreat, I think, from leadership in ways that are going to hurt us in the long run, because we need really good leaders more than we ever have.
Yeah. That's, culture is exactly what I was going to say, because if you, and that's one of the things that's been exposed over the course of this time. That's like, if you didn't have a strong culture before the pandemic, then the likelihood that as a leader, you're going to get the grace you need to succeed through this time is very, very low. And I think that's what's been difficult about this, is not, you know, it's not to say that everybody's not trying their best during this time. There's no guidebook, manual for how to survive a pandemic.
Yeah.
But I think that in the follower role specifically, that space, if the culture didn't exist before from the top down, then you're running into the kind of feeling or sense of, and I think this goes across the board, it's not just in athletics, that, well, what do you mean? On Monday you said this, and now Wednesday you're saying this. So I can't trust you anymore, because you're just changing your mind all the time. And I think to your point, that grace and the understanding is so, so important, because we are all flying by the seat of our pants right now.
And it's, and that doesn't mean you have to trust blindly.
Right.
That's where your culture really helps, right? Because if you have a great culture, you've got the transparency in your organization where the leader's almost walking you through the changes in their thinking out loud.
Right.
So that by the time you pivot from A to B, the pivot is not a surprise.
Right.
It's not somebody coming in 1 week later and dropping a bomb that feels completely outside of the direction you were headed, or what you're dripping that along the way,
right,
about what you're learning, what you're thinking, you're testing things with people. And to your point, that's where the culture piece is really, really critical. And I'll be honest, I thought I knew a lot about organizational culture before I started Athlete Viewpoint. I've learned even more since. We have some partners who have amazing cultures, and we get this sort of balcony level seat, you know, to see how that works. And a lot of times people will say, well, gee, is that like, that feels so unattainable, or it's so hard. We're such a big organization. We can't, that feels too almost like Pollyanna-ish, right? Mm-hmm. It's just not attainable. And, but it is attainable. It's a lot of work. But it 100% is attainable. And when you put your work there, it makes the rest of the work so much easier. Mm-hmm. And then you do get that feeling of satisfaction, and it's all so interconnected.
You just answered kind of by default the last question I was going to ask you in that space. I was going to ask,
sweet,
what is one of the biggest things that you've learned? And it sounds like culture has been, and you can correct me here, but it sounds like culture has been one of the biggest things that makes an impact ultimately on the student athlete experience.
It does. And it's what people are experiencing as employees trickles down,
yes,
to your student athletes.
Yes.
And so you can't be miserable in your senior leadership team and think that you're hiding that from your student athletes when you get an opportunity to travel with them or to interface with them in some way. I mean, some people can, you know, you're masking it to an extent,
right?
You're not complaining around the water cooler about your coworkers with a student athlete present, hopefully.
fingers crossed.
but it's, you can tell, you know, when I start with a new client, I go in and I do a lot of listening and observing and interviews, and I can tell within usually about 30 to 60 seconds of a conversation what the vibe is. Mm-hmm. Is this somebody who loves their work, who's excited about what we're about to undertake, who is going to have a team orientation? Or is this somebody who feels like, I need to get through these 30 minutes with Jen so I can go back to doing my job, which, oh, by the way, is really hard and nobody appreciates me, and so it is possible. It's a lot of hard work, and it's really easy. COVID is a great example. Sometimes it's these really major things that either help us come together and coalesce, that help our culture improve, and they can also be the thing that starts pitting people against each other and help makes it erode a little more so.
Yep.
And a lot of it just comes down to inclusion. Do people feel like they're included in the conversation? Do they feel like their ideas matter? Do they feel like they make a difference every day? Do they see how what I do in my chair over here connects to our mission over here?
Yep.
That the purpose is aligned with the product that we're putting out, all of those different things. Mm-hmm. Those are all the real indicators of whether it's working or whether it's not.
Yep.
And we've found some really creative ways at Athlete Viewpoint to measure those things.
Yeah.
And it's been fun.
Gosh, I could go on and on, but for the sake of time.
As you've seen, so could I.
No, that's fine. This is all super interesting stuff to me. So, and hopefully to our audience as well. But we'll shift into the kind of the final phase of the show before we catch ourselves at a 2-3 hour episode.
So you and I'll just continue these conversations,
yes,
offline, Taylor.
Yes.
I always can tell when I find my people who love talking about this stuff, and I love hearing about people's experiences and what they've seen and what they've seen that's worked and what they've seen that's feels completely off the rails. Yep. And so, yeah.
Yep. I am with you 100% there. So the namesake of the show, this question is related to that. So what is one experience or maybe a series of experiences that you feel has helped you bloom into the person that you are today?
Yeah. I would say two things. I would say motherhood. And as I mentioned earlier, motherhood at the time I became a mother, crystallized immediately for me what was going to be important to me for the next 20 years or so. Mm-hmm. So that's one. The death of my sister. Mm-hmm. When I was in graduate school, she was killed in a car accident.
Gosh.
And that was a long, slow climb back into deciding to engage with life.
Yeah.
But there's a new appreciation that comes out of that. Mm-hmm. When you make the choice to reengage, right? You may as well go all in.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be what it's going to be. So you may as well make the most of it. And then the third thing I think I would say is the Alt MBA that I did and how Athlete Viewpoint came out of that. It changed a lot for me about how I think about my work, how I think about my own professionalism. Mm-hmm. It made me less fearful and more fearless. Mm. I struggled with perfectionism a lot, as a lot of people do. And it helped me realize that at the end of the day, your job is to just do the work. And tinkering and tweaking is preventing you from doing the work. And the reason you're doing all of those things is because you're afraid to put the work out into the world. Mm. And that shift was revolutionary for me. And the other shift from that specific program was an understanding that, you know, whether it's me personally, whether it's our company, Athlete Viewpoint, that we are not for everybody and everybody is not for us. Mm. We do something really specific that connects to a lot of people. I mean, which is great. You want a successful business. And we do things for people who care about culture, who want their organizations to thrive, who are really focused on the student athlete experience, and who they themselves aren't afraid to go do good work and hold each other up to high standards and those kinds of things. Those are the people that I want to find and I want to work with. And that was part of what drew us to Game Plan, mm-hmm. too. Values oriented, mission driven, you know, all of those things. And to not take other people's rejection of me or our product or that's not personal.
Right.
It's business. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's not a cultural alignment and that's okay. And I don't, sometimes I say that and it sounds snobby, you know, like I say it to my team and they're like, really? Like, is that what, but, and I don't mean it in a judgy way or a snobby way or a, but you can spend a lot of time chasing people that don't want you. Mm-hmm. Why not just do great work for the people that do?
Right.
So I'm really mindful of my time that way and our time and my team's time. And, we just try to show up and do the best we can every day for the people that we serve. That's our bottom line. So those are the couple of really important things that I took out of Alt MBA.
Yeah.
Because there would be no Athlete Viewpoint without it.
Right. Right. What would you say is the biggest piece of advice you've ever received?
Oh boy. I've received a lot and I've given a lot. Sometimes unsolicited. I don't know. The biggest piece of advice is, I think one thing I've really tried to embrace more in the last, you know, some of it's age and some of it's experiences that I've had in my life, but it's just really try to be where your feet are. Mm. And I'm a planner, so sometimes that's really hard to do. But it's be present. Like you said, when we were talking, I think before you hit the record button about how you went back to see your family. Mm-hmm. and you were just back seeing your family.
Yep.
And you took off and you were intentional about taking off. So you didn't feel like you're trying to check your email while your parents are talking to you, or that you're trying to do it while you're driving a very large farm and right. instrument. You know, I mean, it's, yep. that would not be safe.
Yep.
But it's just trying to do that. And I've tried to do that more when my kids were little. I had a really strong sense of they're not going to be little forever. Mm-hmm. And you know, my parents are older now, trying to be really present when I'm with them instead of always having the laptop open at the kitchen table.
Yep.
And so I think that's probably one of the most important things. And people are always trying to get us into the future.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's an app called 10% Happier. This is not a plug of it at all. I get no kickback from 10% Happier. But I was introduced to it during COVID. And there's a gentleman on there. He does a meditation at night. It's a sleep meditation. His name's Oren. Can't remember his last name right now. But he says this thing as part of his sleep meditation. And it's, today is over. Tomorrow hasn't come yet. You can put all that down now. Mm. And that's what I try to be better about doing.
Gosh, I feel calmer just hearing that said right now. It's not even time for bed.
Right. I know. Sometimes I'll wake up in the middle of the night and I'll be like, okay, I'm going to channel Oren here.
Right. Exactly.
Yesterday is over. It's not time for today.
Yep.
You can put all that down.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And just be present. What am I supposed to be doing right now? What's most important right now?
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. Final segment of the show here. This is our quick peel round.
Okay.
Similar to a lightning round.
Pressure.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. A TV show that you have recently binged.
Oh, Ted Lasso. Like
Ooh,
everybody,
yes.
right?
Yep. Gosh, what?
But yeah.
So many plot twists in this season two. I don't want to ruin it for anybody. I'm just going to say season yeah. two, above and beyond my expectations based on season one.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
It's been really good. And the thing that I loved about it was we could watch it as a family. Mm. Sometimes there's not a lot other than sports, which we watch a lot of as a
yep.
family.
Yep.
But it's been great.
Yep. Favorite food?
Oh boy. I like all the things. It's a problem. I would say if I really had to pick one thing that I could eat all the time, I really love a good lobster roll.
Hmm. That makes sense.
I know it's random, but when we go away to the beach or so, I can eat one a day while right. I'm on vacation.
Wow. What? I think I've only had a couple of those in my life, but it does sounds pretty good right now.
Yeah.
Favorite genre of music?
Well, I would say alternative.
Okay.
I'm a little more, yeah. And like the older stuff.
Okay.
The Cure, we were in the car yesterday, a Tears for Fears song came on. My son knew it. I was impressed. I was like, good job, mom.
Right. That's awesome. I was going to ask if there's a favorite artist in there as well. Okay.
Yeah. No, you know, the Smiths, Morrissey, all of that kind of love all of that stuff.
Okay. Last one. That's an either or, and then we have a fill in the blank. So,
oh boy. Okay.
Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Okay. And then the fill in the blank. This is the first time I'm using this. I'm switching it up.
Okay.
Blooming is blank.
Blooming. I think blooming is being confident enough to share the gifts that you have to offer with the people around you and the world to make it a better place.
Mm. Oh, man, am I going to have to rewrite the description of the show now? That was fantastic.
No, you're not.
I love it.
but I'll be interested to see what other people's blooming is. So
Me as well.
Yeah.
Just for context, previously we had onions are blank.
Oh,
and I've
got it.
The full gamut of answers there. So I'm interested to shift into this new fill in the blank. But Jen, thank you so much for taking the time today. I really appreciate it. As I said, I could have gone on and on and just continue to pick your brain for hours here, but we'll do that on our own time and keep the show, you know, the same timeline that we've been working with. But thank you so much for coming on and sharing a little bit about yourself.
Oh gosh, it was my pleasure, Taylor. And I just feel so lucky, like we get to keep having these conversations, it, you know, working in the same company now. And yeah, I love talking about this stuff, and I'm excited to, you know, read your dissertation and all of those good things. So yep, definitely. I'm glad this is not a one and done. We get to keep the conversation going.
Absolutely.
Not recorded.
Right. We might have several, more conversations before we get to you being able to read my dissertation, but that's going to be a marathon, not a sprint here, but I'm excited to continue working on it. So, but again,
that's right.
Thank you so much. And we'll see you next time. I'd like to start by saying that I am sad to report that even with my glasses on, I've reached a point in life where I have to zoom in to 125% to be able to read without straining my eyes.
Oh.
Thank you for your...
That makes you feel better?
I'm not sure.
I'll tell you. I'm sorry. I'll be sending you a virtual hug.
Thank you so much. I accept.
You're welcome.
Okay. Another thing before we get into our notes, another thing that I wanted to ask you as I was just listening back to a previous episode. Do I say entrepreneurs weird?
You know, I never thought about it until I just heard you say it in this moment. And in this moment, you did say it weird.
Okay. Because I said it differently than how I've been saying it on the episode, which is entrepreneur.
That's how I say it.
Okay. So more like, no.
You said ers this time.
Right. Like ewer versus er.
It's like manure. That's how I say entrepreneur.
That's the word that was in my head. That's what I just was going to say.
We're so cute.
How about that? I was listening to it and I got nervous that it was like culinary and culinary as I said it on that one episode. Anyway,
we should be listening closely to your pronunciation of words from here on out.
Yeah.
I think I actually always have. I think I'm pretty good at calling you out on it.
Yeah, I think you are too. You're a pretty astute listener.
Astute.
Did I say that weird?
You didn't say it weird. I just like that word. And I'm wearing my glasses right now and I don't usually, and I feel astute. So I appreciate that you pointed it out.
I also wanted to point out, speaking of pointing things out, that this is the first episode in our second block of season 3, which is higher education professionals. So we wrapped up our block of 3 entrepreneurs last week with Jeff and Marissa from the Cookie Society. And now we are transitioning into higher education. And we kick things off with Jennifer Cross.
That we do. I feel like, you know, it's always interesting for me to listen to these interviews because you have so much insight into that field and I don't. And I just feel like I listen and I'm like, I never thought about that. I never thought about that. And like, I've been through not having like, you know, in the athletic realm of the world, but like, probably definitely taking for granted what my educators and, you know, my resources throughout school have provided for me and what all the work that goes into it and all the thought behind, like, for me in the moment, it's just like, oh, this is just an interaction where they're coaching me on how to do well in school. But it's so much more than that.
Yeah. That, you know, I read something yesterday or the day before that was saying that for every hour of facilitation or teaching or curriculum per se, probably 40 hours goes into preparing for and creating and like sifting through research and information to make that 1 hour session or program or whatever, or class, whatever it is, which is bananas. And I can vouch that is, I can't vouch exactly because I didn't count how many hours it took to prepare for programming, but by estimation, I can vouch.
Yeah. I think a lot of what was interesting from this interview, now you can call me out on saying words weird. from this interview was just about the way that like the pandemic has affected this industry. And I'm finding like, as more and more people are coming out and into the world, and I'm like reconnecting with people I haven't seen in a year and a half, 2 years, it's always surprising to me the way that various industries have been affected by it that I wouldn't have never thought about. Like in the news and in the media for the whole time, we've heard about like, you know, restaurants and grocery stores and frontline workers and all, you know, like how it's affected nurses and all that stuff. But I mean, I had a friend come in to work the other day, and he used to run his own like, words. I'm going to snap them into my brain.
Is it working?
It's not, but I'm buying myself time. Is that working?
You're, what do they call that? Vamping? Is that what they call that?
Yeah.
It's a filibuster.
I got it. It's a filibuster. Sure. Like sports and sports therapy and medicine.
Oh, okay. Like physical therapy?
Thank you. It's such an obvious phrase that just would not enter my brain. But like sports focused. And I just saw him recently. He's like, yeah, I closed my business. Sports weren't happening. And no one was getting injured. And he's like, that's great, but you can't run a sports therapy business in a pandemic when people aren't playing sports.
Right.
So, like doing something completely different. There's just like so many things in our lives that I feel like we've taken for granted. Like I haven't had to think about like your industry and higher education and how, and you know what? Maybe I'm a bad friend. I should have thought about this sooner. How you doing, Tay?
I am okay. You're not a bad friend. But it definitely has, I mean, it's been crazy. And I think even back to, obviously it has impacted, I think, higher education and, you know, it's like non-essential in-person, right? So education and a lot of that stuff shifted to the virtual space where it was like, it's still kind of happening. It's not really happening in the same way. But with all those shifts, I think about back to the beginning of the pandemic and in talking with somebody who was in an essential position and had gone to work the whole time, right? They'd been going to work constantly. And I was not, right? It was like, okay, we're going to take these 2 weeks off. They shut down the NCAA men's basketball tournament, which is unheard of in our world. Like that's not something that just happens. It's not like a snow day where the NCAA men's basketball tournament just is like, well, we're going to take a year off. So my world was actively crashing around me March 12th, 13th, you know, that time of 2020. And this person that I was talking to has no, you know, it's kind of like, okay, stuff's happening. I get it, whatever. But is also like, you know, kind of like, will you shut up? Like, stop talking about this. Cause I'm tired of hearing about it. Or, you know, it's like and not in a negative way, but it was, you know, like, okay.
Preservation way.
Right. Just in a like, okay, I get it. I understand, but I'm still going to work. So this is like, you know, just a different space. It's just a completely different thing that's happening. And so.
But me?
No, it wasn't you. I was
still going to work. I was a little bitter about it.
I would have been, if it were you, I would have been much more direct in that example that I shared. But it's interesting to think about, because then I have to stop and think about it from their perspective and what do you mean you're okay? And you're like still functioning right now. And what do you mean you don't want to talk about it? Like, this is all anybody's talking about in my world. So it's still happening, right? Like that's what one of the notes I had, and Jennifer spoke about. It is something that's still happening. COVID management is now a permanent part of college athletics, of the reality of college athletics. It's something we're going to have to, you know, be focused on for the rest of time. It's not going away clearly anytime soon.
Yeah. And if it's not COVID, it's, you know, whatever the next thing is.
Right. Don't say that.
but we've been dealing with this for years and years and years. We've just, like, for us where we're at, we haven't lived through it.
Yeah.
But it's a reoccurring issue. There's new, I'm sorry. I can see the stress building in your face.
I just want no diseases and rainbows and concerts.
I want to go on.
Yeah. What is that from Mean Girls where she's like,
Girls.
Yeah, I just want everyone to get along. I am that girl. That is what I want.
I think everyone wants that.
Yeah. Except for the person in the back that yells, she doesn't even go here.
I didn't go here. what a cinematic gem.
Yeah. A really great movie. Yeah.
We're veering off course.
We are.
I didn't mean to stress you out. These are issues that have come up over and over again, though, to be frank.
You know, I keep hearing that.
What I did want to segue into before we get off of the subject of like the pandemic and this industry is just that it was really interesting hearing Jen's perspective on like the pressure that leadership has in a role like that, where like everything is unknown and uncertain and changing at the drop of a hat, drop of a hat, drop of a dime. What's that saying?
Drop of a hat.
Drop of the hat. What's the dime? Anyways.
Tip of the tongue.
Tip of the tongue. Everyone is looking to leadership, right? Like, what do we do? What's our next move? How do we make business continue? How do we adjust? And in leadership, you're like, I know what you know. Like, I'm going to make an educated decision and I'm going to confidently communicate that to you guys. And then in 2 days, I might have to tell you that I was wrong.
Right.
And that we have new information available and now we have to pivot. And I think that's something that like,
Pivot. I had to.
But like, until I heard her say those words, I was like, oh, wow. Like, no one knew what they were doing, but everyone's looking to other people for answers. Like, whether they're someone publicly in the media, like, that is communicating protocol, like, they're flying by the seat of their pants just as much as we are, which is an issue. But there's so much pressure on leadership, and like without good culture established, like I liked the comment about, you know, you have to have good culture and trust in your people for them to have the grace that something like this requires, like being in a pandemic where you're like, all right, we're pivoting and this is what our marching order is moving forward. And then a day later, you're like, and we have new information and we're changing that completely. And now these are our new marching orders moving forward. And to have a team that like, just is blindly like, all right, I'm with you. We'll figure it out. Let's go. Like, you have to have so much trust established there. And if there's like any kink in the system where there's distrust and employees are like, nope, looking for an out, looking for a scapegoat or someone to blame, it can so easily change the dynamic of your workplace where like employees are like, no, we didn't trust you before. And now like, we're not really with you. And I'm out, you know?
Right. Yeah. So COVID exposed a lot of cultures that were like that, right? That did have a kink in the system or did, you know, were maybe fine outside of that, but it exposed a lot across the board, not just in athletics. I think everywhere it exposed a lot of that. It's been, it's been curious to watch. I'm looking at my notes right now because I had written culture is important. Leaders have been flying blindly during this time, which is exactly what you were just describing. It's a weird space to be in because I think when you get to be an adult, you realize that no one really knows what they're doing, right? Like when we were kids, you're looking up at people, or at least I was looking up at people who were 20, 25, 30. And I'm like, those are the adults. They are so smart and they know what they're doing and they know all the things. And now that I am 30, I can confirm that we do not know all the things. And most of the time, we don't even really know what we're doing.
what we're doing our best.
That's right.
That's all we can really ask, right? Yeah. Making an effort and trying.
I thought you were about to go into song just then.
Oh, I didn't we talk about this?
And
I
a hoot nanny.
A hoot nanny.
Didn't we talk about this or what?
That I have this habit lately of like when I'm trying to convince myself of what I'm saying, I'll sing it.
Yeah, we did. We did.
I'm like, and I'm doing great and having a great day and I'm full of energy.
Ba-da-ba-da-ba-ba. I'm having a great.
Yeah.
That's how I imagine each of your songs starts. And maybe that is how every song in my head starts.
I can confirm that every just generally as I my thoughts in my head are usually led by da 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 da.
Have you seen this is another sidebar. Have you seen the show? I guess not, because you don't have Apple TV. How the heck is it pronounced? Schmigadoon, I think.
Nobody had my attention. You know I love a fun word.
Schmigadoon, without throwing too many spoilers, features Cecily Strong from Saturday Night Live and
wrong name, by the way. I love the name Cecily Strong.
Michael. Is it Keegan? Michael Keegan Key from Key and Peele? Isn't that his
first name? Yeah.
Right? Doesn't that sound right?
I'm nodding my head, but I'm only 81% sure that that's right.
I'm going to have to look it up now. Anyway, Keegan Michael Key? This is really going to bother me. That's it. Keegan Michael Key. That's him. Now that I've confirmed that, we can move on to the rest of the story, which is
I'm on the edge of my seat.
Have I built suspense here? Schmigadoon stars the two of them amongst many others. And they are a couple, the two of them, Cecily and Keegan, and they, you know, go on a trip. They go on this retreat. They accidentally stumble into this magical musical land where they first think that people are doing flash mobs. And then they quickly realize, oh no, we're stuck in a musical.
I would like to live that show. I'd fit right in.
I think you would actually really like
it. I'd fit right in.
Ba-da-ba-da-ba-ba-ba. I think you actually would. The show is pretty funny. It was a short series. I don't know if it's been signed on for a second season. But anyway.
I mean box step and hat, a tip of the hat simultaneously. Yeah.
It looked fun to me. Yeah.
All right. There was something prior to this whole the little sidebar thing that I felt I wanted to share, and now it's gone. Oh, I remember. It was back to like the struggles of leadership and things that I saw during COVID. And I think I have food in my hair. you know when you feel something crusty in your hair and you're like, I definitely like touched food and then scratched my head. Anyways, I'm so sorry.
I'd just like to say that in the first episode, before we had a guest, you announced that you had pink eye, and today you've now revealed that there's food in your hair. And I'm nervous that people are going to start to question your hygiene.
My hair is clean aside from, so I did a little food photo shoot today. We're launching some new food at the restaurant tomorrow. And it was waffles that had like Nutella and peanut butter and whipped cream and ice cream. And I think I took a bite and then scratched my head. But this hair is freshly washed, I promise you. There's just a tiny blob of something in it.
It looks lovely from my angle. I would have never guessed that likely lots. A waffle
and
or
syrup.
And I
would like to touch on the pink eye thing. Because we breezed past it in that episode. And I just want the world to know that I had really bad allergies and was rubbing my eyes a lot. And I think I was just infected with like, we were in Nashville for a wedding. They had different dander and pollen. My eyes were running nonstop. And I just kept rubbing them and I infected it with something. We don't know that it was pink eye.
I was just going to say, I was surprised that you announced that because I didn't think we knew for sure that that's what it was.
My eye was irritated with something and we had to clean it. It was just a running joke that I had pink eye. And then I never really clarified that on the initial episode. So to circle back to that, that's that story. And I had an ice pack on my eye the whole wedding.
Mm-hmm.
It's cute.
It was pictures really
turned out really good from that.
I actually do really like the photos from that wedding.
I'm so glad, Taylor.
Yeah. I thought you looked
like I was swollen shut, but you looked cute.
Well, I'm talking about beforehand, of course. Okay. Where do I want to go here?
I have a place.
Yes.
I was going to tell a quick story about leadership in a pandemic.
Oh yeah.
I think what I, as I was listening to the interview and thinking back on like who, what leaders did I know and what did they do that like was pretty cool to me. And like working in the food hall, working in the restaurant industry, like everything was changing all the time. Restaurants were shutting down and something that I, in hindsight, in the moment was like stressful and like, what the heck are we doing and why are we doing this? But the owner of the food hall was like, okay, everything but essential businesses are closing down. We're going to be an essential business. We're going to turn this place into a farmer's market. We're going to utilize the resources that we have with like our restaurant supply companies that have toilet paper, that have flour, that have sugar, all the things the stores are running out of, we can bring in, and then we can also support all the restaurants that are shutting down by selling their items in a farmer's market, I'm doing air quotes, style. And they turned the whole place into a grocery store in a matter of days and had like fresh produce bags and like all the things that, like I said, stores are running out of. And we had local people shopping online, getting fresh meats from a butcher that had shut down. And to me, I feel like that was a huge risk and it was a lot of work, and businesses did creative things like that everywhere. And I think those are the ones that like in the moment I was like, this is crazy. We're not grocers. We're like have meat slicers that we got and we're like slicing deli meats and filling grocery bags. I'm like, what are we doing? But so I'd be interested to hear actually like what other businesses, what creative solutions other businesses found to stay afloat and pivot and, you know, keep paying their employees and keep business running. Cause I think mm-hmm. so many companies had to do that. And that's what's cool from this whole experience is like to see the creative solutions that people came up with.
Yeah, I agree. There was definitely a lot of pivoting throughout the process. Interesting to see all those things. And speaking of pivot, I'm going to pivot us to a note that I had written, which says that I keep pivoting conversations to, for my own research interests. Like as I've been talking to these guests, I feel like I'm like, ooh, this is interesting for me. And so then I'll ask a question kind of based on the research that I'm doing, which obviously I was not able to do last week with Jeff and Marissa and the Cookie Society. I'm trying to think if there was any possible way that I could have weaved that in, but I don't know. Because cookies are cookies, you know?
Cookies are cookies.
Cookies are cookies.
That is a valid statement.
Maybe that can be their new tagline.
Hey, cookies are cookies.
The Cookie Society.
We are. We're nice people.
Right. The Cookie Society, where cookies are cookies.
You have been out of advertising for too long, I think, Taylor.
We have. You are correct. I was thinking the other day about a good high school friend of mine. We didn't go to high school together. We played club together growing up. And she and I had this plan that we were going to launch a t-shirt business, and it was going to, her name is Katie. And still is Katie. She didn't change her name. And we were going to launch a business called KTTs. And the tagline she came up with was, where it's more than just cotton.
Nice.
Yeah, it's good times.
It's weird that that didn't really take off, you know?
We did not make any t-shirt. Well, the two of us. Mm-hmm. I made a lot of t-shirts.
It was your first mistake.
Yeah. It wasn't cotton at all.
It was less than cotton.
Right. I did make a lot of t-shirts during high school, but that's neither here nor there.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I loved the fear of heights, stepping out of your comfort zone, parasailing visual representation that she has still today in her office. I feel like I have a lot of stuff that's kind of all over the place. Champion beach sitter. I appreciated that. And she kicked things off and explained herself that way. You've raised your hand. Do you?
I'm raising my hand because it moved past something I wanted to talk about. Okay. I didn't want to cut you off, but I did want to let you know that mm-hmm. I have a thing. Mm-hmm. I really liked all the talk about like fear and is it true danger or are we just holding ourselves back?
Yep.
And I liked the parasailing visual, and I want to share something that like, you guys don't know my mom, but I've seen my mom come out of her shell a little bit. And I don't know if it's just like, she's doesn't have to worry as much about like raising kids and, you know, all the responsibilities that go with that. But my mom has like literally gone parasailing, rides horses. She goes on vacation. And my dad is like, who is this woman? He sends me a video of her like up in the sky. This woman that like has a fear of heights. And now she's like, I'm going to go freaking parasailing. You want to come? My dad's like, no.
Go Kathy.
Yeah. She really is just like stepping outside of her comfort zone. And I've noticed that it's a good reminder for me and just like little things that I do where I'm like, but I might fail. And I'm like, but my mom just went parasailing. My dad's sending videos of her doing crazy stuff that she never would have done. I'm like, I want to be that person.
Have we said that before that our moms are both named Kathy?
I don't know if we have. We both have Kathy moms.
We both have Kathy moms and they're both lovely ladies.
Hmm. They are lovely ladies.
I would also like to clarify that I know your mom, but you were speaking to our listeners, some of whom may know your mom.
Some of whom do know my mom.
Is it whom or who?
I don't want to travel down that road.
Neither. It's
our
it's,
listeners don't want us to travel down that road.
It's far too,
Googling stuff.
It's far too late for that. Okay.
I don't know if it's a Kathy thing, but I'd say 98% of the Kathys I know are just lovely.
I would have to think about that for a minute. I'm trying to think of.
I can't confirm.
When I'm thinking of our mothers, 100%. There's no question. But I was trying to think of other people I know named Kathy, and off the top of my head, I just can't think of them. But I know more.
Okay. I also am in a gym dad club.
Gym?
Which is just that a few of my friends also have dad's name, Jim. So we call it the gym dad club.
Let me explain to you what I thought the gym dad club was. Some sort of a dad club that you attended at the gym.
Oh, that'd be weird.
It would be. It would be weird. I thought it was weird.
That's fair. I'm glad we clarified. Cleared the air.
Okay, I have two more notes.
Okay.
And then I think we should bring this train into the station.
Mm-hmm. I'm having so much fun.
That's a new phrase I'm going to try out. I've never said that before. Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, first one is what she said about, I think it was maybe from the Calm app, a sleep story that she had listened to or something of that nature. And the guy said, which she repeated during our interview, today is over. Tomorrow hasn't come yet. You can put that all down now. And I was just instantly like, am I in a sleep story? This is delightful.
That is a, I'm going to save that.
Yeah. Do you want me to send a voice recording of me doing it?
Please.
I can do it in a creepy voice.
Why don't you do it again right now? And then we'll give the listeners an opportunity to hit record on their phones. And then they can also have it. Okay, get your phones out. Hit pause, guys. I'm going to count you in. 3, 2, 1.
Today is over. Tomorrow hasn't come yet. You can put that all down now.
You know what? I think you might have missed your calling as a Calm app person.
Do you feel relaxed?
Yeah. Good job.
I think it's the phrase, honestly, because when she said it, I felt the exact same way. And I was literally thinking that she might have missed her calling as a Calm app sleep story reader.
Don't discredit yourself, Taylor. That was a lovely rendition.
Thank you, Melissa. If anyone needs voiceovers or sleep stories read by me, I am taking requests.
I will call you in an hour, and I expect you to just speak to me until you hear the slight purr of a kitten. That's what I like to think of myself sounding like when I sleep, when in reality, I'm pretty sure it's not a gentle purr.
Did you get a kitten?
No, that's how I envision my snoring sounds.
Your sleeping sounds, okay.
Yeah, okay. Cute and gentle and not roaring through the whole household.
Okay, last one. Last note that I have, that is, this was another blooming. This was another blooming is blank. I had to pause for a second because I got nervous about that. We changed it to blooming is. And she said, blooming is being confident enough to share the gifts that you have to offer with the people around you and the world to make it a better place.
She came up with that on the fly.
Yes.
I did not send her that in advance to have something written and prepared.
On the fly.
Who is this lady?
A marvel of the universe, clearly by what she's created with Athlete Viewpoint and what they're doing in the higher education space. But I literally was like, do I change the description of the show? Like that was fantastic.
Does she do consulting for podcasts? Because
she does consulting in general and some like executive coaching, I believe. Do we get her?
Can't see me, but I'm raising my hand. I would like to be coached.
We can probably make that happen. This might be the first time. Well, you've met several of our guests outside of the podcast before, but this could be the first time where you could actually become best friends with a guest by way of consulting.
That makes me excited, but it makes me feel like I can't be best friends with all of the previous guests.
Why? You definitely can.
You just said this is the first time you could be friends.
Well, I'm saying this is the first time.
You know what? Now that I'm thinking back, in all these podcasts, I've told all of our guests, I'd love to be your friend. No one has reached out to me to hang out.
And this is a call to action for those of you who've been on the show to...
For listening.
Yes.
Don't feel guilted into it, but know that my ego is... taking a hit in this moment, realizing that none of you have been like, yes, let's be friends.
Slightly bruised. That means one of two things. A, that they don't want to be your friend. B, the more likely option, that they don't listen to the recap.
I'm hurt by both.
Yeah, well.
I thought that B was going to make me feel better and that would be a better... I'd be like, yes, everyone is option B.
What could I have said that would have made you feel better?
Oh, they're intimidated by my beaming person. I don't know. There's no good there.
They thought you were joking.
Well, I want to come off as authentic, Taylor.
Oh, then that doesn't help either.
No, it was a lose-lose situation.
Yeah. I still think the best option is that they don't listen to the recaps.
It's not a great option, but of the two, it makes me feel less rejected.
That's fair. That's totally fair. And with that...
What a note to go out on. I know. I hope I have positive things to report back on the next episode. I'm like, you know what? I'm eating delicious cookies with my new friends. I'm in Texas because they reached out and invited me to come to their cookie shop. You know, something like that.
And Oprah was there.
And Oprah was there. And they all lived happily ever after.
I wanted to say amen just then, but that...
And you were looking for the end.
Yeah, the end.
The end. All right, well, on that note, mm-hmm. I think this is how I sign us off.
This is it. This is your moment.
Okay, I'm going to stop talking about it and I'm going to do it. And that's the way the onion peels.
We will see you back next week for guest number 2 in our higher education block. And this is a higher form of higher education this guest has come on to speak about than what you might typically be used to. We're very excited to have him. First guest in this category. Please join us next Tuesday, Bloom's Day. We'll see you then. We're so excited.